Okay, we are resuming here, and we are in Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 61B, and we ended here on page 138. We were talking about the transition from Capricorn to Aquarius and from Saturn, which Alan Leo considers as a ruler of Aquarius, and which indeed has strong evidence as being a ruler of Aquarius, of Saturn as being felt in Aquarius largely through its influence in Capricorn. And in a certain sense, Saturn has to give way to Uranus, which it does for the advanced individual because the karma has been overcome in Capricorn and is no longer needed. Although DK will discuss the rulership of the first decanate of Aquarius as Saturn, and at least for disciples it will present those trials and difficulties which all disciples must face and overcome. So the disciple is still in the need of the presentation of that type of obstructive opportunity, whereas the true initiate perhaps is not. So anyway, when the transition is made, it says here that, what does it say here, a little earlier, a true master mason, he becomes a true master mason and can then proceed with world service, undeterred and held back by no thought of self or selfish desire. Well, what is a true master mason? And it is, let's just say, at least an initiate of the third degree, really higher. A true master mason, a true master mason, let's put him in capital letters, is really a high initiate, at least of the third degree, and really beyond. Okay. Then the freedom of Uranus is particularly pronounced because the man has learned how to discipline himself, and now he can become a law unto himself without interfering with the rights of others. Saturn in Libra, the rights of others, the justice which has to prevail between human beings. Okay. Then we go on, and it says, he comes then, under the influence of Uranus, that mysterious and occult planet. Interesting way of viewing it. The initiates of the old days knew about this planet, but it waited until the last part of the 18th century, only in the last part of the, of the 18th century. Was it discovered, although it was the heavenly and secret planet of the initiates. It's the planet of the Hierophant, the planet of the true initiator, the planet of Sanat Kumara, when he descends as the initiator at the third initiation. It is then more Uranus than it is Neptune as the initiating planet. So this advanced Master Mason, this advanced Aquarian, his will is focused and developed by the Uranian influences, and he develops into a leader. Yes, let us remember that Uranus is very much a planet of the will. It has its first ray monad and its seventh ray soul, and the seventh ray is a more concrete aspect of the first ray. So it is even more, eventually, a planet of the will than is Saturn. His will is focused and developed by the Uranian influences, and he develops into a leader. But he is a selfless leader, and he is in touch with archetypal ideas which are advanced through the divine plan and not through his own personal or national agenda based upon more limited understanding. He brings about desired changes and produces those new conditions which will help the soul of humanity express itself more freely. Well, we are certainly in need of that, aren't we? We now have Uranus in the sign Aries, the sign of the new, the first ray sign of the new. First ray, seventh ray Uranus in first ray, seventh ray Aries. Certainly the new conditions of a revolutionary nature are being produced at this time. And the soul of humanity, which has been in bondage in many respects during the Piscean era of the last 2160 years, is now being liberated. There is a cost to this liberation, as we see. People are being killed in the streets. They're being shot by those regimes which want to maintain their selfish grip upon power. There's always going to be a price to pay to produce those new conditions. But it will be seen that greater freedom results when the revolutions do occur. I suppose there are successful and unsuccessful revolutions. I suppose it can be questioned whether the Bolshevik revolution was really successful. It did produce a Russia that could defeat Germany in the Second World War, but it also produced a great totalitarian system, and DK says the one thing the hierarchy attempts to move against is totalitarianism, because it prevents the expression of the free will and of the unique qualities of individuals. When it comes to the American Revolution, also a Uranian event, and the French Revolution, well, the American Revolution, I think, was particularly a success, perhaps more so even than the French Revolution. So anyway, this advanced Master Mason Aquarian becomes a true self-directing leader, but it's not the lower egotistical self which is the source of his motivation, but a higher sense of self, the group self, in line with the divine plan. Okay, so he expresses himself more freely and creates new conditions. Wherever Uranus is found and Aquarius is found, we have the new conditions which allow for the greater expression of the soul. Water being the symbol of substance and of material expression, plus emotional motivation. Okay, so we have the material energies and the emotional impulses, emotional motivation. Aquarius is consequently dual in its activity. Now, we're talking here about even the less developed Aquarian, who has the material expression and emotional motivation. Sometimes we think of Aquarius strictly as a mental sign, but it is not so. There is much of the emotional quality here, even though it is an air sign. And DK will discuss with us why this is the case. Water being the symbol of substance and of material expression. Now, usually substance substands material expression. So we might think of the etheric energies of substance and material expression as the more dense material energies, plus emotional motivation. We gravitate towards something we desire, or we are repelled away from something that we dread or are repulsed by. And in either case, the motivation is emotional. It has to do with whether there is fulfillment or disruption in the object towards which the emotion is attached. So Aquarius is consequently dual in its activity. And the third ray expresses itself powerfully through this sign. Now, we have to understand that it is really the sign that he is talking about, and not simply the fact that Uranus is potentially a third ray planet in some aspect. But the Jupiter doesn't bring in the third ray, and the moon is bringing in the fourth ray. No, there are energies which express through the signs of the zodiac, and there are energies which express through the planets ruling the zodiac. In this case, I think the third ray will be active in both cases. Remember, when we start numbering the signs from Aries moving clockwise, Aquarius is the third sign, so it has a correlation with the third ray. The third ray expresses itself powerfully through this sign reaching our planet through Uranus and the moon. The moon, which hides or veils Uranus symbolically in this case. I think it is justified to think of Aquarius as having some degree of third ray in connection with it, but certainly the planet Uranus has a third ray component. Whoops, don't want to erase anything here. The planet Uranus has a third ray component to it. Perhaps the personality ray of Uranus, as some have thought. So there is therefore to be found a double influence of Uranus. Uranus is veiled by the moon. It is the most advanced of the veiled hierarchical rulers in Aquarius. There's also Vulcan, and there is also Neptune. So he is definitely connecting the third ray with both Uranus and the moon. The moon in its own right was a chain within the Earth scheme, and that chain was the third chain, and thus, by numerical resonance, the third ray came in via that chain. And we know that many third ray monads achieved individualization on the moon chain. So the number three is strongly connected with the moon, even though it is said basically to veil an undiscovered, non-sacred fourth ray planet, in addition to the other discovered planets, or at least named planets, Vulcan, still non-discovered, Neptune, and Uranus. So this third ray works powerfully in this sign, through the sign itself, I would say, and also through the planet Uranus, where it rules probably one of the periodical vehicles of Uranus. There is therefore to be found the double influence of Uranus, so a very Uranian sign, doubling its influence, expressing through the moon as well, expressing the quality and bringing in the energies of the seventh ray in one case and the third ray in the other. There is therefore to be found the double influence of Uranus, expressing the quality and bringing in the energies of the seventh ray in one case and the third ray in another. Well, I think really Uranus is bringing in both the seventh and the third ray. Seventh and the third ray. But whereas we do expect that Uranus is the transmitter of the seventh ray, we probably have not heard, except in this particular context, that it also brings in the quality of the third ray as well. The seventh ray is, in the last analysis, the focused, differentiated energy of Ray One, as it expresses the will of the first aspect of divinity on earth through the power to relate and bring into objective manifestation by an act of the will, both spirit and matter. This is one of the great sentences telling us about how Uranus and the seventh ray operate. And it definitely is connecting the seventh ray with the first ray. Although the seventh ray in this case is more differentiated and more focused aspect of the first ray. The focused, differentiated energy of Ray One. Okay, so we have here operative in this sign, at least through the planet Uranus, the first ray, the seventh ray, and the third ray. The degree to which the third ray is expressive through the sign or the constellation Aquarius has yet to be established, but there are reasons to think that it is closely related. Okay. Thus, it brings about, through the activity of ray 3 expressing itself through humanity and its individual units, because humanity is the throat center of the planetary logos, and thus the throat center expresses the third ray, through combining the energies of the three rays which are released through its ruling planets. Thus it brings about, through the activity of ray 3 expressing itself through humanity and its individual units, though combining with the energies of the three rays which are released through its ruling planets. Okay, I think I said the word thus. I should have said the word this, excuse me. So let's just read these things in connection in this ponderous manner. The seventh ray is, in the last analysis, the focused differentiated energy of ray 1 as it expresses the will of the first aspect of divinity on Earth, a third ray planet, through the power to relate and bring into objective manifestation by an act of the will, that's a Uranian act of the will, both spirit and matter. This it brings about through the activity of ray 3 expressing itself through humanity and its individual units. Now, we have to say, is it the seventh ray that is bringing all of this about through the activity of ray 3? The seventh ray expressing through the third ray, which controls humanity, especially at this present stage of its development. Though combining with the energies of the three rays which are released through the ruling planets. So we have ray 3 coming through. Ray 3 is coming through and combining with the rays of the ruling planets of Aquarius. And these rays are Uranus, the seventh ray, the will to be and to know simultaneously on all planes of manifestation. It's an amazing idea. The word simultaneous is very important with Uranus, as it is discriminated from the factor of sequentiality found under Saturn. So the will to be, to assert one's being, and to remain in the state of being is highly Uranian, but there is a strong cognitive mental dimension to Uranus. So Uranus also has to do with the universal mind. Interestingly enough, we are told later that Aquarius rules the universal mind, and Uranus, as its major ruler, will also, therefore, be involved in the qualities of the universal mind. So there has been the ability in Aquarius to cover the wholeness of anything. And Uranus is part of this occult embracing of wholeness. So not only do we have the first ray power to be, but we have the third ray power to know, and not to be limited in that knowledge or being to any one plane, but let's just say embracing the whole in both being, being and knowing. So that's one of the very good definitions of Uranus, and we think about it as a truly occult and mysterious planet, we can understand why it is so. This is something that is transcending in its meaning normal soul capacities. We are already into the capacities of the spiritual triad and even of the monad. To be on all planes, that's monadic, and to know on all planes simultaneously. And there, the factor of straight knowledge, direct knowledge, intuition is indicated. Straight knowledge, direct knowledge, intuition, all indicated by the word all planes of existence, and the word simultaneously. Yes. Okay. So we have, he's been telling us that the third ray is coming through. We have to watch his wording very carefully. He says it comes through the sign. He's not only talking about the rulers of the sign, he says it expresses itself powerfully through this sign. So that can well mean the sign itself and reaches our planet through Uranus and the Moon. It's almost as if Uranus and the Moon are transmitting this third ray, which really belongs to Uranus, but we have, it really belongs to Aquarius. But we do have as well the ways in which Uranus is associated with the third ray and the Moon with the third ray. And then this third ray is combining with the seventh ray of Uranus and the second ray of Jupiter, Jupiter ray 2, the fusion of heart and mind. And Venus, of course, is like this as well, blending heart and mind, or knowledge and love. The third ray is blending with this Jupiterian energy as well, the fusion of heart and mind, which is the subjective purpose of manifestation, especially upon our planet with its second ray soul, and especially in our solar system, which is presently concentrating upon the second ray as it has a second ray personality. This is brought about through the third and seventh ray activity on the exoteric wheel. So third ray, we've been seeing that it comes through Aquarius and Uranus, and the seventh ray activity through Uranus particularly. And if we're going to deal with the manifestation of this fusion of heart and mind, we do need the third and seventh rays. And both of them, in fact, are pretty strongly mental rays, as well as rays of manifestation. Well, mind and manifestation go together. The third ray and the seventh ray are both rays of mind, as well as rays of manifestation. So if heart and mind are to be fused, we need not only the second ray, but we need the second and the ray in conjunction with the third and seventh. So we need the combination of three rays in order to manifest the fusion of heart and mind. So we need we need ray 2, ray 3, and ray 7. Okay, and then continuing with the ways in which this third ray coming through Aquarius and Uranus and the Moon combine with the rulers of the sign, we go on to the next, the Moon. Moon, ray 4. Really, the fourth ray doesn't come from the Moon per se, but it does come from this veiled or hidden non-sacred fourth ray planet, the position of which has yet to be determined, but some astrologers are on the track. The Moon, ray 4, the will to be and to know. Now he's combining what we've just done. The will to be and to know, that's Uranus, okay, plus the fusion of heart and mind, and that's Jupiter, is the result of the work carried forward in the fourth grade of hierarchy under the influence of that energy which produces harmony through conflict. So these developments must be expressed through humanity, the fourth grade of hierarchy. Not the first, but the fourth grade of hierarchy. So it's all the result of work within the fourth kingdom of nature, as the fourth grade of hierarchy sponsors that kingdom. And it's all worked out through harmony, through conflict. So the will to be and to know and the fusion of heart and mind do occur and finally demonstrate, all this demonstrates as a result of harmony through conflict. Let's see, I'm hoping harmony through conflict. Okay. Right. I would here call your attention to the fact that in connection with the moon, as it is related to one of the creative hierarchies, all right, is that the seventh manifested creative hierarchy, you have in the moon itself the exoteric influences of the ordinary mode of procedure upon the wheel of life, which is the wheel of form, the ordinary mode. And in the planet which it veils and hides, in this case the planet Uranus, you have the esoteric energy which brings the hierarchy to subjective realization. So, okay, the moon stands for both an exoteric and an esoteric influence. It has a third ray component. It has a fourth ray component considered exoterically, and behind it particularly stands Uranus, maybe the strongest of the veiled hierarchical planets in relation to Aquarius, accounting for the double Uranian influence in this sign. So Uranus is the esoteric energy, that's what he's telling us, which brings the hierarchy to subjective realization. Maybe not all of us are realizing intimately the nature of hierarchy, but under the influence of Uranus, this will be increasingly the case. Under the influence of Uranus, we will increasingly realize the subjective presence of the hierarchy. Under the moon, this would never be the case because it relates to the outer level of life and especially to the dense physical vehicle, which is not a principle and which is inherited, the moon indicating inheritance, inherited from a previous system altogether, though more developed on the moon chain than it is in our particular Earth chain. So, you can see here that DK is bringing in certain relationships connected with Aquarius, which we would not normally fathom. This whole lunar and Jupiterian relationship, and the relationship of the moon to Aquarius is a very complicated one, because really it's veiling three planets, and especially in this context, the power of Uranus, which is extremely esoteric, revealing the nature of hierarchy, which in a way makes all things new and brings about the transformation of form for humanity, impulsing that transformation of form so that the soul can more fully express through those renewed, transmuted, regenerated forms. All right, moving on. Uranus gives. There's quite a bit on Uranus here, isn't there? It's a good way of thinking about this planet. Gives innate, spontaneous activity. This sounds like activity based upon intuitive impulse, and this produces evolutionary development, both natural and spiritual. It's almost like Uranus is, shall we say, is the action and impulse of the nucleus of any living being. It is the radiatory nucleus. Nucleus. We are asked in one of the rules to learn about the nature of that which radiates. Let's see here. If we go to the rays and initiations, around page, let's say, around page 20 or so, and we'll go a bit farther. And the 12th, 13th rule. We have to learn four things the disciple must learn and comprehend before he can be shown the inmost mystery. First, the laws of that which radiates. It is the monad, it is the nucleus, in this case it is Uranus, standing for that which radiates. The nucleus is the radiatory center within our nature, and it brings about all kinds of liberating changes in anybody's energy system. So innate spontaneous activity. You know, Saturn is certainly deliberative, it's ponderous, it thinks things through in a reasonable and sequential manner. But Uranus is giving that immediate knowledge of a situation, which does not have to pause to consider, but acts suddenly. Perhaps that is why it is so connected with the sign of impulse, which is Aries. So innate spontaneous activity. Notice that the activity aspect is strongly pronounced in Uranus, again connecting it to the third ray. The activity aspect within Uranus connects it to the third ray. And very interestingly, it is the third ray which rules what is called the will to evolve. So this innate spontaneous activity of the nucleus, of the inmost aspect of our nature, produces evolutionary development under the will to evolve. This operates in the natural world according to natural law in the beginning, and later in the spiritual world according to spiritual law. And then this is one of those important statements about Uranus. It is the urge to better conditions. Now, I suppose the word better is used as a verb there. We make things better. We better them. On the other hand, it can be considered the urge to move towards better conditions, in which case better is an adjective. But whichever way we want to interpret that, we see that when Uranus is operating the way it should be and is drawing in the Aquarian energies, we will definitely have improvement of the pattern so that the soul can more spontaneously, more efficiently, and more truly expressed through that improved pattern. This is what we call a revolution, which is like getting back to the archetype. A true revolution is a return to the archetype. A true revolution is a return to the archetype. Okay. Because so often the distortions take over, and instead of reflecting the pattern in the heavens, we have all kinds of lesser patterns here on Earth, which are distortions and obstructions, and prevent the true archetype from expressing. Uranus restores archetypal conditions. I'll just say that. Uranus restores archetypal conditions. And conditioning, of course, is ruled by Saturn, but so often the conditions are not archetypal at all. So in many ways we have to learn how to archetypalize our life, or archetypalize the moment, which means to restore it to the way it should be. Now, he is expanding upon the rulers here of Aquarius, and he's talking about the dual influence of the moon, both exoteric and esoteric, the spontaneous activity toward better conditions of Uranus, and now here's Jupiter. Jupiter gives an inherent tendency to fusion, which nothing can arrest. Remember what he said about Aquarius and Pisces, that Aquarius gave that appreciation for the unity, for the coherence, holding the various factors of the whole together. And he associated it with universal love. Well, here Jupiter is playing its role in the expression of universal love. It gives an inherent tendency to fusion, which nothing can arrest. So that when we think about the techniques of fusion, the technicalities, not that. Okay. when the techniques of fusion, we think about the techniques of fusion, they are largely under Jupiter, bringing all things together, the force which brings all things together. The achievement of ultimate synthesis is inevitable, and this Jupiter promotes. Think about the monad and ultimate synthesis. Ultimate synthesis, yes. Jupiter is the ruler of the monadic plane, its hierarchical position in relation to Virgo, and of all the factors within our energy system, it is this highest or ultimate factor, which is the factor of synthesis. So Jupiter, the monad, and synthesis, these are factors which are closely related. Jupiter, the monad, and synthesis. And then think again that Aquarius is the sign of universality. And Jupiter plays its role in this, in inducing this appreciation of and participation in universality. So these planets, they all have a different type of nuanced function in relation to each of the signs. And in this particular case, Aquarian universality is promoted by Jupiter. Synthesis and universality are two concepts which are closely related. So let's read what he said again. Jupiter gives an inherent tendency to fusion which nothing can arrest. You think about the inclusive nature of the second ray type, drawing everything into a wholeness in which it is participating, until we are told the causal body itself is destroyed through the increasing capacity to include. That's found in the beginning of Letters on Occult Meditation. Very interesting ways of destroying the causal body and the destruction through inclusion. How interesting. Until the ring pass not, I suppose, of the causal body is destroyed by the ever-widening embrace. The achievement of ultimate synthesis is inevitable. Jupiter being, of course, a very powerful planet in our solar system, a planet, I think, most related to our sun, the planet most related to our sun in our solar system, and leading to that ultimate sense of wholeness, which it is the objective of the solar logos to promote in the units which comprise its manifestation. All right, and now he'll say a bit more about the moon. The moon brings about the inclination to create these conditions which lead to the great and critical transformations of instinct into intellect. Well, the moon is the planet most associated with the unconscious yet intelligent promptings, which we call instincts. So the moon also, well, it's interesting, the moon can stand for various things and veil various factors. It can represent instinct, it can represent the senses, it can represent the limited intellect, and it also can veil those planets which reveal the intuition. So where the moon is, we have to interpret carefully to see what level of energy is coming through it. So reading this again, the moon brings about the inclination, the bias, the tendency to create these conditions which lead to the great and critical transformations of instinct into intellect. But the moon per se is most associated with the self-forgetful aspect of the human being, the instinctual nature, the unconscious, subconscious nature. This the moon brings about. Well, we can never say that the moon itself brings anything about, but forces veiled by the moon, by the moon, bring this about, the transformation from instinct to intellect, But Uranus causes the great transference in human consciousness from intellectual perception to intuitive knowledge. This is very important because, you know, our intuitions sometimes appear as sudden, spontaneous flashes, the dawning of a new idea coming from the cosmic ethers, which in general Uranus rules. So there is a great transference from intellectual human consciousness to the intuitive, straight, direct knowledge of those who are focused in the spiritual triad on the Buddhic plane. So in this respect, Uranus is related to Buddhi. Let me spell it right. And to intuition. Although Neptune, Mercury, and Jupiter are more particularly the intuitive planets, the sudden revelation of truth via the intuition is a Uranian factor. Bear in mind that the esoteric forces combine with the forces of the exoteric and orthodox planets, and they do not negate their influence. You know, again, one important statement after another. This is one which I have excised in my own mind, and which I consider to be very important. It's the idea here is that the esoteric forces do not strictly supersede the exoteric forces. That what is given by the exoteric planets is combined and elevated and combined with the new and impending esoteric forces. In other words, when we take a look at Jupiter as the esoteric ruler of Aquarius, it's not that those people who respond to Jupiter overcome and leave behind all that Uranus indicates, but that the Uranian impulses are integrated within a larger set of tendencies and energies indicated by Jupiter. I think we learn in Aquarius, about the power of combination. So we do not necessarily exclude, we continue to include. After all, Decay is speaking about inclusion here. And he gives a very good example of how planetary influences are not superseded but included within a larger context. So reading this again, bear in mind that the esoteric forces combine with the forces of the exoteric or orthodox planets, and they do not negate their influence. So, as I have said before, for any astrologer, the power of combination, learning the power of combination, is a must. We have to put together different energies, we have to see how they would operate if they work together, and we have to hierarchicalize them. By this I mean we have to know which of two influences is the dominating influence and which is to be considered the subset of the greater influence. Now, I suppose there are ways to combine in which both things are equal, but when we're talking about tiers of rulerships, in this case, the Jupiterian influence would be more emphasized than the Uranian influence as we continue to move into the evolutionary potentials of Aquarius. But later, the Moon comes in hierarchically, veiling Uranus, and Uranus again may take the dominant position along with the other two planets veiled. So bear in mind that the esoteric forces combine with the forces of the exoteric or orthodox planets, and they do not negate their influence. So it's think of it this way in your own horoscope. You know, you are moving in a way from the Moon to the Sun to the Ascendant. And it's not as if you leave the Moon entirely behind, then move to the Sun, after which you leave the Sun entirely behind and move to the Ascendant. They all three have to combine, and hierarchically The ascendant is in the ascendant position, ascending position, the highest position. The moon is a subset of that type of energy, and so is the sun. The sun is a subset of the ascendant, and the moon is a subset of the solar energies. They only supplement and dominate them. Okay. They do not negate their influence. They supplement and dominate. Well, at first, I suppose, supplementation is coming in. Because when the esoteric rulers start to move in as important, they are not yet stronger than the exoteric rulers. So, at first, we have supplementation. And then later, as the esoteric ruler becomes more powerful, we have the domination of the exoteric influence. Domination. Let's get that right. Domination of the esoteric influence. Okay, we may be experiencing degraded audio. Let's hope that that is not the case. Hopefully not. But if so, there are various recordings being made here. So please close any unused. Okay. Well, I guess I can. Well, it's not allowing me to do that. So I will simply proceed. The man is thereby enriched because he has two rather than one. Or three, rather than two, or rather than one. And his experience is extended, and his consciousness expanded by the new energies. In other words, if you're simply a Uranian Aquarian in the Earth, well, a Saturnian Aquarian, your consciousness is expanded by the addition of the influence of initial Uranus. And if you are then a Uranian-Saturnian Aquarian, your consciousness is expanded by the addition of the energies of Jupiter, and then still further expanded by the energies veiled by the Moon. We're looking here at the third ray, we're looking here at Vulcan, Neptune, and finally a very powerful hierarchical Uranus. Just because a person is born in a particular sign does not mean that he is presently displaying all the potentials of that sign. Those things grow as the lives elapse. But all the time, he says, all the time the effects and conditioning achieved and attained under the old influences are not altered. So, you know, here he's not just talking about Aquarius, he's talking about something that we have to learn to apply when studying any of the signs and their rulers. The effects and conditioning achieved and attained under the old influences are not altered. Mercurian Aries people maintain their Martian conditioning. Vulcanian Taurians maintain their Venusian conditioning. Venusian Geminians maintain their Mercurial conditioning. Neptunian Cancerians maintain their Lunar conditioning. And those Leo people who are now being conditioned by the sun veiling Neptune maintain their solar conditioning, their Ahamkaric conditioning, under Jupiter. And the lunar Virgoans, with the influences of Vulcan and Neptune implicit, maintain their Mercurial conditioning, and the Uranian Librans, their Venusian conditioning. And in the case of Scorpio, we have Mars in both places, but there are early types of conditioning, very aggressive, combative, courageous, and so forth, not as wise in the early expression of Mars. So the initial conditioning of Mars is retained as it is spiraled up through a higher type of Martian influence. When it comes to Sagittarius, if you are responding to the Earth, you maintain your Jupiterian conditioning. We have a double Saturn. Again, it's a question of higher and lower. There's a lower type of conditioning and a higher, but it's Saturnian in both cases for Capricorn. And here we are in Aquarius. The Jupiterian Aquarian retains the Uranian conditioning and the Saturnian conditioning. And the Plutonian, even Neptunian, Piscean maintains the Jupiterian condition. And we would have to think all of this through and see what is established by these, by the earlier expression of the exoteric ruler, and how that serves as a foundation for the esoteric influences, how the earlier influences are supplemented at first, enhanced, I would suspect, and then dominated. So these earlier influences, that's what DK is talking about here, they have determined his nature and fixed his qualities, and therefore remain persistent and energetic. So, you know, whereas it may not be legitimate to read the higher influences of the esoteric rulers for the average individual, it is also not legitimate to stop reading the meaning of the exoteric rulers for this more advanced individual, as I have just suggested. In other words, for the advanced individual, one has to read both the exoteric and the esoteric rulers, though emphasizing the dominating position of the esoteric ruler, but not prematurely. This is the key. So many mistakes, I suppose. People get excited about seeing a new system of rulerships. They go in there and they start applying those rulerships in a wholesale manner to people to whom they really do not apply. So that sense of proportion of who you are dealing with and the degree to which that individual is really expressing the esoteric rulership, that is part of the wisdom of the astrologer. So these earlier influences, they have determined his nature and fixed his qualities, and therefore remain persistent and energetic. But the new and deeper influences and potencies are those in which the future upon the fixed cross will condition and motivate gradually and steadily his activities. Notice it's not all at once. The influence of the fixed cross, the influence of the esoteric rulers, is not a sudden happening, as if a certain line of demarcation has been passed once and for all, and now it's all the esoteric rulers. So gradualism is the key to motion through which by which evolving life progresses. Gradualism. Everything is graded. Everything is sequential. There are sudden events, but they have been built up by preparation. So we're in such an important part here of the Aquarian chapter, and he's giving us really big hints about how to read the esoteric and exoteric planets. You see, as DK says, this is all scattered throughout his books. All right. They have, these earlier influences have determined, that's a Saturnian word, determined his nature, fixed his qualities, there's another Saturnian word, and therefore remain persistent and energetic, although a little beneath the surface and a little beneath the line of effort that he is presently pursuing. But the new and deeper influences and potencies are those in which the future upon the fixed cross will condition and motivate gradually and steadily all his activities. So all of us, I think, we should be fading in the influences of the fixed cross and the esoteric rulers. In the future, instead of speaking of the orthodox planets when dealing with the planetary influences, we will speak of exoteric and esoteric planets. It's nice to speak of them, but it's possible to get tongue-tied while doing so. Orthodox is, in a way, easier to discriminate. But, okay, exoteric and esoteric, and so bring our vocabulary and definitive words more into line with the inner teaching, as if the word exoteric is better somehow to describe the influence of these orthodox planets. It gives a greater relation to the word esoteric. All right, let's see where we are here. Well, we are at that point. So I will say that this is the end. Esoteric Astrology Adventure 61B. And we have moved from page 138, probably, to what? Okay, to page 140. And we have been discussing the esoteric and exoteric planets. In relation to Aquarius, we've been discussing the power of combination. We've looked at the rulers of Aquarius carefully. We've had some marvelous descriptions of what these rulers really do and the way all of these energies combine to bring out that very intricate and complicated response of the advanced Aquarian to living experience. All right. So now we will do our great invocation. And we try to close all of our sessions with that. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thank you, everybody, for attending. And a few of these esoteric astrology adventures are a little longer than others. A couple of them have been 2 hours in duration, one of them 3 hours in duration. And it's sometimes more efficient to do it in that way. We are working with the constellation sign Aquarius. We are discussing its rulers. We are discussing the rays that come through the sign and are transmitted through the rulers. Remember that, you know, the fifth ray of Aquarius, and he also seems to imply the third ray, but the fifth ray is transmitted through each of the rulers of Aquarius, even though they may not themselves emit the fifth ray. All right, we will see you for Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 62, and study hard. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.